again, I want to thank everyone for a fabulous day. This was really a remarkable day of learning and growth and inspiration and chizuk and of Torah learning. And we really, I think we did accomplish our, and we're in the midst of accomplishing our goal of the title of Wonder Woman, and we are exploring all different aspects, and we are privileged now to have the Dean of Azrieli here with us, Dr. Rona Novick, and to share her words of wisdom with us. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm humbled by the lineup that I come as the mop-up hitter, the mop-up batter. But I want to, truth in advertising, say that when I was first invited to come, I said, I'm not giving a shiur. I don't have time to prepare a shiur. And that doesn't speak to my strengths. I am not a scholar. I am not a posek. I am not blessed with the training of GPATs and all of the women who do wonderful advanced learning. I come to you as a psychologist whose own journey I'll share a little bit about that has given me both personal and professional experience on the roller coaster. and I want to talk really about some of the challenges that are happening in the secular world that have particular relevance for us living as Orthodox Jewish women and thinking about our future going forward. I know somebody's taping this, but please, it's not, I'm not telling anybody what to do or what's right to do. I just want to share some of the realities. So I'll start with kind of a personal story that illustrates how new and different we are, and that really you are all a bridge generation. Can everybody hear me okay? I tend to be loud enough, right? Even though I'm not like talking right into the microphone. Okay. We're a bridge generation. So that when I had small children and my father-in-law called my husband in his office one day just for I want to know if you're going to come over next Shabbos or whatever, and was told that my husband was out of the office. He was home with a sick child. My father-in-law's first response was, "Is Rona in the hospital?" Because the only possible explanation, and I'm not that old, ladies, but the only possible explanation for a man not being in his office was that I must have been so seriously ill that I was hospitalized. And this is not so long ago. We are living in that bridge time when the men that you marry, the man that I married, do not have role models of what it was like to have women who were in the workforce. It was, I think all the time also when I first moved to the suburban neighborhood that I live in and have lived in for over 30 years, you know, that when your children enroll in school, they ask you for the contact. Who's your emergency contact? Well, I could pick one of 10 neighbors on my block. I was the only working woman. I had my choice. Pick any neighbor to be my emergency contact. By the time my children were in sixth grade, there was nobody left to list as an emergency contact. All the women were working women. So we are living in times where the roles and the opportunities are changing so quickly and so exponentially fast, and that can sometimes feel like we're on a roller coaster. And what I want to talk about is whether that provides us with stress or challenge or opportunity or all of the above, and how do we deal with that? So, and of course, you know, like when the tech guy was here, this little clicker just worked fine. And now, not here, and we're not moving. See if we open that door, if it works. If the signal does not work through the door, we try the low-tech solution first. Oh, well, something worked. There we go. We just leave the door open and it works. So, originally, a woman's place was very clearly known, and a woman's role was very clearly defined. You might have multiple roles, mother, wife, daughter, but all of the roles were family related. Now, the limits of our roles really are endless. Women can and do almost anything. In many environments, we could have long discussions, and there are lots of sociological studies about glass ceilings and where women are still struggling to make headways. But in general, they're really, in the secular world, if you're a woman thinking about career now, there isn't, I can't think of a career that isn't open to you. I can't think of a role or an option in the secular world that people say, no, women can't be engineers, or no, women can't be astronauts, or they can't be, there really isn't anything that isn't available. So one of the things that the psychological research has looked at rather extensively is it a problem that in the modern world we now have a lot more roles? At least we have the possibility of a lot more roles. And I'll go through some of the research, but the bottom line is that quantity doesn't seem to be the maximum, the most salient issue. It's not about how many roles you have. It's really about conflict amongst those roles. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. It's about whether there are roles that we choose or roles that we've been assigned to, whether we want them or not. Now, some of us, all of us, by the way, every one of us in this room has roles we were assigned to, whether we wanted them or not. You're all daughters. You didn't wake up in the morning and say, I want to be someone's daughter. That's just the nature of the beast. We're all daughters. Now, I will tell you, being in the sandwich generation, that has a very different meaning as your parents age than it does when you're a daughter and you're 15 and your mom is 32. You know, but it's, or do the math, I'm not good in math, when your mom is 40 than it does when your parents are in their 80s and 90s and you're a daughter. You may not want that role, but you have that role. So sometimes there's enormous conflict that comes from being in a role that's not something you really chose, but it's foisted on you. And finally, conflict comes when there are roles from which you're excluded. Some of that Rev Schechter was talking a little bit about women's desire for certain opportunities that they feel excluded from, and he was pointing out maybe we feel excluded for the wrong reasons, or maybe our understanding of halakhic issues make it different than what we thought it would be. I don't want to go through all of the detail. I've given you some of the data there because I want to leave time for questions and conversation, but there's an enormous amount of research looking at what stresses women out, particularly women who do more than one thing. And this slide alludes to the fact that if you look at it carefully and read through all the data, it's not having more roles that stresses you out, it's having less support. So being a working woman isn't bad if you have a spouse who's helping you out. If you're single and you have multiple roles, it's harder. If you're raising children alone, it's harder. If you're divorced, you're more likely to experience stress. There's even been research that looks at what this does to our heart. It breaks our heart. Literally, role conflict breaks our heart. There's a lot of research on cardiac heart disease and women and their stress, partly because cardiac heart disease is thought of as kind of a silent killer for women. We are highly likely to develop heart disease, but we are less likely than men to identify the symptoms and do something about it. So the research says that it actually can be protective to your heart if you have rewarding roles, even if you have lots of them. If you have a million jobs you do, but you find it all helpful, that it actually can mitigate arteriocalcium buildup, hardening of the arteries. Particularly, the research has been in black women who are African-American women who are particularly susceptible to this in heart disease. However, the researchers say there's a little bit of a problem here. We study heart disease in women with multiple roles, but guess what? Women who have multiple roles tend to take more care of other people than they do of themselves, which might mean that they have heart disease because they don't go to the doctor, because they don't eat right, because they're not exercising. And they may be ignoring the early signs of heart disease, which is what, it's not the stress of multiple roles that's causing them to have higher levels of heart disease. It's that having multiple roles means that there are many other things that they do and do not do for themselves. The bottom line is that there's equivocal findings across the field about whether being a working woman, also raising a family, being a woman who has career and volunteer, being a woman who's involved in multiple things, causes you depletion or enrichment. And really, the issue seems to be satisfaction. That if we are doing a dozen things, but they are satisfied, we're better off than if we're doing one thing that we hate or that we find not at all fulfilling. the two conflicting hypotheses are the hypothesis of depletion, that the more we do, the more we have overload and strain, that psychological stress comes from something called role stress, when we have two roles that directly conflict. If you think about it, this happens all the time. It happens all the time, even when you might have two roles. Is there anyone who, while you're a student at Stern, also does either volunteer work or has a paid job? Anybody? Are there ever times when your finals are inconveniently scheduled or your job needs something from you and you say, I can't do this because I have a paper due? Right? It happens all the time. That's the definition of role stress. If you age yourself forward a few years and you're raising children and have a job, or you're raising children and you're on the shul board, or whatever it is you're doing, the role stress comes from the fact that two people, two entities, want a piece of you at the same time, and you can't serve everybody equally. Okay, and the research on the depletion hypothesis says that it's not the hours in the day that aren't sufficient. It's our psychology that's insufficient. We feel depleted because of the last line there, that we're dissatisfied with our ability to perform these roles. That's really critical. The roller coaster happens because of our own, lack of a better word, mishigas, that we have to do everything really well. That we can't, I can't tell you how many times, this has happened to me multiple times. At Azrieli, we have the privilege to have Stern women take some of our graduate courses. You know, we have a robust BAMS. Some of you may be in the program already. I apologize if I don't recognize who's in which program and who has been in our classes before. But so it is not uncommon when I'm teaching a master's level class for someone in the class to come to me and say, Dr. Novick, I'm going to miss three classes because I just got engaged, or I'm getting married and next month and I'm going to be away and I'm... And I say, mazel tov. First of all, mazel tov. But the second, my syllabus makes it very clear. If you miss one class, no problem. If you miss two excuse classes, no problem. But you miss more than that, it will downgrade your grade by, you know, X amount. You'll go from an A to an A minus or an A minus to B, the more you miss. I have had women say to me, what do you mean I'll get an A minus? And I say, but sweetheart, you're getting married. You found your beshert. It's a wonderful time. Or you're having a baby. B'shah tova, wonderful. Go enjoy it. Be a mother. You'll get a B+ in a graduate course. You get an A minus instead of an A. I'm dropping the class. That's the mishigas, the craziness of we want to do everything so well, perfectly, that we get stressed because we don't accept that it's okay. It's all right. If I get to be a mom or a kala and I get an A minus, Gamzu Latova, that's also okay. It's not the end of the world. The alternative hypothesis is the hypothesis that multiple roles enrich us. That the more we do, we actually get more resources. I will tell you that I don't even want to count the roles that I have. I already alluded. I'm sandwich generation. I just had a family crisis in Florida where I had to go help parents. I am a dean. I have a family. I'm a grandmother. I have a million jobs. And I'm a clinical psychologist. I have a private practice. All of my patients, by the way, are always in crisis when I'm dealing with my family. Like, they know that I'm out of town. This is the time I need an emergency session, right? So all of this is happening. You would think I'm massively stressed. The support that I got in my office, because of the family crisis I was dealing with, every one of my colleagues, what can I do? How can I help? What do you need? What do you need me to cover? I'll teach your class. Or do you need your grades done? Do you want me to read your students' papers? How can I support you? So my social capital actually increased because of my additional roles. It was easier for me to handle the struggle with a family member ill, out of town, because I have another job. I have another set of resources. So the enrichment hypothesis says we actually do better when we have more roles, that we can also, if I'm feeling like, oh my gosh, I'm such a failure as a professor, I gave a lousy lesson, but I go home and my spouse says, that's the best chicken I ever tasted. Success in one role can mitigate feelings of frustration and failure in another role, and vice versa. If I burn the chicken, but I give a great lecture, the theory is that having multiple roles gives us a little bit of wiggle room. It gives us flexibility. It increases our social capital, so we have more access to more resources. Now, the problem is, and I've alluded to this, and the literature, believe it or not, there's a whole psychological literature, sociological literature, on superwomen. Not capes, not flying. The definition in the literature of a superwoman is a woman who performs a combination of multiple concurrent full-time roles, wife, mother, worker, homemaker, and caregiver. They're not even talking about a work outside the house. They're talking about your wife, oh, they did say worker, wife, mother, homemaker, etc. They call these women in the literature double burdened, that we have the requirements to fulfill in two areas, domestic and career. And they think of the psychological and physical stress, but most of the superwoman syndrome that you see discussed in these articles talks about the stress that results from pressure associated with achieving perfection. It's not that we can't do a lot of things. It's that we hold ourselves up to absurd standards. I love it, by the way, when I'm at somebody's Shabbos table and they talk about the 17-step recipe to make the hand-dipped strawberries and the special ganache, and and I'm like, okay, if it doesn't cook in one pot, it's not on my table. And you know what? People love coming to my Shabbos table. It's very delicious. You could have yummy peasant food. I don't cook with cookbooks. I cook okay. So what's gained and what's lost? This is research that I love because this is a reality that I think also we as women and of your generation, I believe that it is beginning to change, but it's research that we have to keep in mind. I believe that we are dealing with something called the new math. It's why you is also very expert at this new math. We keep adding with no subtraction, as resources have gotten sometimes more limited here. It's just do more with what you have. Well, it's the same in the world of women. Women's liberation, women's egalitarianism has not taken anything off our plate. It has simply added more to our list of responsibility. And think about the research that I'm going to describe was done already. It's 20 years old. They found egalitarian couples, couples who said, we believe in total equality in our family. We divide all responsibility and chores. We do not have archaic notions of what's woman's work and man's work. No, no, no. Down the middle, we divide everything. They found a group of couples, about 100 couples, who very clearly said, this is what we believe. Then they studied what actually happened in the homes of these 20 couples. And what they discovered was there might have been egalitarian assignment of chores, but the list of who did what was always generated by the wife. The dad might staff the birthday party, but the mom had bought the cake, sent out the invitations, done all of the executive function and administrative planning of the household. And that all planning functions of running the family still remained with the wife. I think it is amazing. I've never, ever heard a woman ever say that she's babysitting her children. But you hear dad say it all the time. I'm babysitting this Sunday. I can't play football. I'm babysitting. But women don't babysit their children. Women mother their children. And these, I don't mean to malign men. Again, they have no example. My son works for one of the top accounting firms. He was the first. My grandchild is 9 months old. He was the first person in the firm who was eligible for 7-week maternity leave. And he took it 7 weeks after baby's born. It was glorious. It's like absolutely amazing. But this is 2016, the first time that a man got paternity leave. So we have to realize that as much as we think we've come a long way, so much is different, so much is not different, so much is still the same. And the other piece is that we know that stress comes with flexibility. The more choices you have, the more stress you have. There was a book written, I think it was written in 1974, called Future Choice. They thought it was a very cute kunst when they wrote this book, which was written by Alvin Toffler, about the explosion of change and how it was blowing us all away psychologically and stressing us out. They thought it was very cute that they would print the book with different colors. So when you went into the store, you had to decide, do I want the pink cover, the blue cover, the yellow cover, the orange cover? This was their, like, amazing cunts. You know, nowadays you have to decide, do I want it on Kindle? Am I downloading it? Am I reading it? Am I ordering it from Amazon, from et cetera? But they talked, even in 1974, about how rapid things were changing and how much more flexibility was stressing us. We used to consider in sociology research that a generation took about 25 years. Sociologically, a generation is considered a new generation when things have changed so much that the life of the child born at that point is really markedly different from someone born 25 years earlier. Generations used to be considered 25 years long. Anybody want to guess? What's a generation now?
10.
How many years?
10.
Less?
5.
Little more?
7.
What's the difference? 7 years. 7 years, and we have a new generation. That means that when you have children, let's say you have your first child at 21, they're 3 generations apart from you. Their world is so different from yours. Isn't that amazing? But if you think about it, my children don't know what a phone booth is. They didn't exist in days before cell phones. They can't imagine a world without the connectivity and technology that we have. And my children are not young. And she's not a genius, but my 9-month-old granddaughter knows how to swipe. She knows how to swipe. Her great-grandmother doesn't. I know how to swipe, but the great-grandmother doesn't get to, you know, touch screens. But it's amazing. And meanwhile, my 23-year-old son doesn't know how to rotary dial a phone. Because you don't, not, you're all like saying, what? What's a record? What's a phone? What's a rotary phone? We don't know. All of this means that we're confronted with new realities very quickly and with so much flexibility that we have to make decisions and we don't know how to do it. Now, if we think about the modern landscape for women, so in addition to this endless possibilities, we have voices like Sheryl Sandberg, if anyone's read her book about Lean In. People know that book?
Yeah.
Sheryl Sandberg talks about women have a tendency to put ourselves in the back seat and we should lean in and go for it and not, you know, sell ourselves short. All of Sheryl Sandberg's mentors were men. They all... My contention, and I haven't read the whole book yet, so I really shouldn't speak about it, but my contention is women can't lean in unless men open the way for them to lean in, unless men invite us to lean in. Family structures are much more fluid now. The notion of, you know, every family has a mother and a father and 2.5 children, even in the secular world, the modern landscape is very different than it was even 10 years ago. And if you read any women's magazines, you will inevitably find the recurring and constant stay-at-home mom versus career woman wars, which I think are horrible and unfortunate because so many women who work do it not by choice. You know, the level of poverty and need in this country is extraordinary, and a lot of women are working so that their children eat and so that their children have health care. And they don't have a choice. So it's so silly to, you know, be negative and pejorative for women who do that. But even for women who make that choice to have a career, to contribute to the world in ways beyond their family, wonderful. For parents and mothers who choose to stay home and who can do that, wonderful too. We shouldn't fight about it. That's the modern landscape. But what about the modern Orthodox landscape? On the one hand, we have, as you know, Rabbi Schechter shared with us, some very clear halachic parameters, although halacha is always nuanced and, you know, it depends on who your rav is and who you ask and what the read is, but there are halachas of women's roles and women's prerogatives as well as women's mitzvot and obligations. But then we also have traditions that are not halachic, but they're just things that feel funny or... If we challenge them, we get pushback because it's never been like this before. And quite frankly, unless one is extremely skilled, extremely talented, and extremely knowledgeable, sometimes knowing whether the resistance that I'm getting about a role I might want or a role that doesn't feel comfortable for me, I wouldn't necessarily know whether it's the first or the second. In the modern Orthodox world, in addition, despite the fact that family has changed elsewhere, the centrality of family and the focus of children and women's role in bringing children to the world and raising them has never been stronger. If you speak to women who struggle with infertility, if you speak to couples that struggle with infertility, they speak volumes about their feelings of loneliness in Jewish communities where they don't feel that they're a part of it, because so much of Jewish communal life is around school, around shul activities that engage families, and they feel different and they feel awkward. Not only is the role of women and the role of family so central, but the role of women in family has always been very central in Jewish life. If you haven't read the Rav's tribute to the Rebbetzin of Tain, and that paragraph that Rav J.J. Schachter always quotes, where he talks about that his father taught him halacha, but it was through his mother's gentle way of being, through her experiencing of the Yom Tovim and of Shabbat, that he learned the feeling of Yiddishkeit, that he learned the tam of Jewishness, the smell and essence of living in a world where you feel God is around your shoulder, God is over your shoulder, God is in your life. That he got from his mother. And there are many other religious sources that talk about the role of the father to teach halacha, to teach text, but the role of the mother to teach spirituality. And then just add to the mix, of course, the financial, that with tuition costs what they are, almost all Jewish families now have financial realities impacting their decisions. And so women, unless you're blessed with winning the Powerball tomorrow, yay, let's go, YU. I thought we should all just, everybody in YU should buy a ticket. Is it tonight?
It's tonight.
It's tonight is the drawing? All right, if you don't see me tomorrow. but I'll give a lot of money to Stern if I win. I will, a lot of money. But it means that we're not always making our decisions by choice, that we're sometimes making them because of financial realities. So what do we do? How do we handle all this? And then I want to open it to your question. So first, we have to be okay with being okay. We have to let go of perfection. It has to be all right if your children, if you have children, aren't meticulously dressed every minute, if every paper isn't perfect, if you are not the employee of the month every week, if you borrow a few minutes here in order to do that, and if you occasionally, buy takeout and eat takeout. All of those letting go of perfection is so important, regardless of which roles you're juggling. Second, I cannot underscore this enough. You need cheerleaders. Avoid naysayers. You need cheerleaders. I know that when I was much younger, and I was going to Soviet Jewry rallies, and I was getting involved in Jewish community things, and my parents were like, "Oy, gewalt, what's she doing? Why does she have to do this? Why can't she be like a normal kid and just do her schoolwork?" God bless him, my grandfather, should rest in peace, said, "She is going to make you proud as a wonderful balabas. Just leave her be." He was a cheerleader, and I have to say, I married a man who is probably more incensed when women are not given equal due than I am, who is the biggest cheerleader, who will, in every ad that YU does, will say, "How many women? How many women do they have on the poster? How come there are women? I mean, he is an incredible cheerleader for the rights of women, and married someone with a PhD already when he was getting his degrees and was totally comfortable with having an accomplished partner, and very proud of my accomplishments as I am of his. So I don't think I could do what I do if I had a partner who was saying, "Well, I really need you to make more steps in your chicken, and I want you to double dip the strawberries," and I couldn't do that. I need somebody who says, "You can do this." Avoid comparisons. It's so easy to look around us at other women and say, "She looks so put together. She gets straight A's. Look at what her household looks like. Look at where she goes on vacation or the job that she got offered. I'm nothing compared to her." You never know. I mean, Dan Chaschut is such an important paradigm. We do not know what's in people's pechlach. What you see on the outside may have nothing to do with what else is going on in their life. I can tell you as a therapist, I see the inside. of what's going on in people's lives. It does not match the reality that is presented to the rest of the world. So avoid comparison, because invariably we never compare and say, oh, I'm far ahead. My grades are better than that person. I don't have to study as much as her. We use comparison to denigrate ourselves, and that will only add to our stress. Get training. Find mentorship. Find women, men, colleagues, peers who have been through what you are going through, who can tell you how to do it, and don't hesitate. It's one of the greatest parts of my professional life when people call me and say, you don't know me, Dr. Novick, but I'm thinking of going into chinuch, and could I come talk to you? Or I want to talk to a frum woman about what it's like to work in a, you know, in a hospital. I heard you worked in hospitals for years. Do you think that I can do this? Women in particular like mentoring other women. It's part of what we do. We're nurturers. Find the mentors who will open themselves to you, who will help you through, and nothing makes things easier than hearing from someone who's been there and done that. You don't have to do it their way, but just learning from their experience is incredibly helpful. And finally, clarify expectations. We tend to sometimes seek perfection because we think that that's what is expected or required of us. And sometimes if we just say, I recently invited a very high-powered woman to take a position with our department. And she said, with all due respect, I can't commit to the amount of travel. I can't commit to the amount of FaceTime because of family issues that are going on right now. And so I'm going to have to decline. I said, but wait a minute. You're expecting that you have to travel. I'm not expecting you to travel at all. All of this can be done virtually. We have the wonders of technology. We'll Skype you in. It turned out it still wasn't going to work. But the point is, here was someone who was saying no based on expectations that were not the true expectations. There's no question in my mind that the world is a world of unbelievable expectations, unbelievable opportunities available for the women in this room. It's also a world of challenges. And coming to terms with and finding a comfortable place for yourself is the greatest gift that you can give yourself. I'll close with just this thought and then take any comments or questions. I worked for, remember, years, I'm not going to admit how many, not in the Jewish world. Although every hospital I ever worked in except Stony Brook University Hospital had Jewish in its name, they were not Jewish settings. And I worked as a frum woman. You know, that was irrelevant, although my Irish Catholic boss, who was also a woman, would shoo me out of the hospital on Friday afternoon saying, why are you still here? Don't you have to go make Shabbos? But in those settings, my gender was irrelevant. What position I was offered, what I was asked to do, where I spoke, when I spoke, what conference invited me, had nothing to do with my gender. It had only to do with my credentials. 10 years ago, I came to YU. I came to what, to me, is coming home. Finally, my outside and inside world match. I can throw in my Yiddishisms. I can talk yeshivish. I don't have to hide my spirituality. As a psychologist, it's not always so kosher to talk about God and spirituality, though it's getting better. But used to be thought of as something Freud would cure us all of. So finally, I come home. I'm in a place of comfort. And yet, I had to confront something that I've never confronted in over 30 years in a professional, now I said the years, of a professional career. And that was that there are roles, very clear and specific roles in Jewish life, in the Jewish world, that are male, that are specific to men, and that are not, I'm not going to do that. So whereas I might be, you know, the head of something in a hospital, there are things, I'm not going to be the head of REITs, ever. You know, it's not going to happen. And that, I was surprised at the adjustment that it took for me to, like, just get used to that and realize, but that's just the way it is. And that's the way I'm okay with that. That's the way I would want. I don't want to be the head of REITs. Thank you very much. I don't think it would make any sense. So that's a little bit about my journey and about, for me, what's made it so rich and so doable is to be able to understand that with all of the roles I have, there's always a place I can go for satisfaction, and I don't need it. I don't need to get all of it. with one-stop shopping. I've also learned not to be perfect. I'm very good at not being perfect. Questions or comments? Yes.
You just mentioned again now the idea that we should accept the fact that we don't need to be perfect, but in a lot of fields, there's still, you were very lucky with the field, there are a lot of women who are able to be very successful, but in some fields, it's a little harder to break in as a woman still. Hopefully, it will change soon. And so you also have this need to be perfect because you have to show that a woman, like, I'm just as capable as they are. So it can't matter.
You don't have to be perfect, but you have to be really good. And the other thing that I learned from years of working as a frum woman in a non-frum environment is you make yourself indispensable at the times that you can be indispensable, so that when you need to run out, Erev Rosh Hashanah, when you're taking, you know, a gazillion days off in September, October, nobody says a word about it because, you know, I worked on inpatient units of hospitals. The nursing staff loved me. They loved me because all of my orders for the weekend were done on Thursday night. The rest of the residents and physicians and doctors were writing things up till 10, you know, 4:30 on Friday. And we're making the nurses crazy, changing plans. I knew I had to have it done Thursday night because I can't leave things for Friday. So you have to be very good. Yes, you have to prove yourself. But even there, you don't have to be excellent. You have to be really good. And certain fields are so competitive that, yes, you also have to kind of know going into it. You have to say, let me think about my temperament. If I know I'm going to go into not only medical school, but I'm going to choose veterinary medicine. Very, very difficult to get into vet school. I'm going to choose, like, not only veterinary medicine, I'm going to choose the particular specialized surgery that takes 2 people a year. Well, then you have to know you're setting yourself up for a really tough life, and maybe you could be happy with being a veterinarian who does something else. You know, I think we have to weigh the balance always. Yeah.
I don't generally like to ask this question. Do you think men have, meaning I don't like to compare men and women in ways which they're incomparable. Do you think men also have the same issues with the balance and having multiple roles? Because you said, you know, the men will... the father will be the chaperone at the party, but it's really the woman doing all the things, and I think that is a huge problem where women have kind of been there, had the workforce necessarily open to them, but men don't have the house and the home open up to them just yet. I don't think so. Do you think they also have that same kind of stress?
They have stress that comes from changing roles, but it's a little bit different. And part of the stress is that whereas to some extent we can all look to our parents, our mothers, as models of what does a mother do, our spouses and the next generation of spouses and today's men can't easily look to our fathers. I mean, my husband's father never touched a diaper, ever. My husband changed diapers, and my sons are totally engaged. And yet, they're going to meet men in the workplace. Like, I was very concerned, I will tell you. I was very concerned when he said he's taking 7 weeks. I thought, is this going to change the way that they see him and his firm? Accountants are not, you know, supposed to leave in March. Baby was born in March, before tax season. You don't take time off then. Like, they own you, the firm. Is this going to jeopardize his career? He had that stress. How do I be a modern, involved father? What I want to be in this new world, but my bosses may expect that family isn't important to me. So I think that they have different stress and that they don't have role models. Some of them feel it's not appropriate for me to take on these roles. Really, I should, but I want to support my wife. So they have the same conundrum, and they don't have a model of, I want to be just like my dad, because that model is not relevant anymore. Other comments or questions? Thank you for including me. I have flyers from Azrieli. If people are interested in information, please feel free. I'll leave them up here. Have a wonderful day.